Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting the film series Testigo Witness, Goya in the Movies. Held on select Fridays in May, each film touches upon artist Francisco de Goya's visions of the world, kicking off with Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro on May 10th at NortonSimon.org.
Support for LAist comes from Visual Communications, presenting VC Film Fest, celebrating 40 years of Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander filmmaking, with over 200 films May 1st through 10th. Info at festival.vcmedia.org.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Manto. We're listening to part of the terrific score of Seven Samurai from composer Fumio Hayasaka. The film Seven Samurai debuted April 26, 1954. This is its 70th anniversary, voted the 20th best film of all time as part of the British Film Institute's top 225 list back in 2022. It's on so many other best film lists as well. Akira Kurosawa's movie has also been hugely influential on films that have followed. We're going to take a look back at Seven Samurai, what makes it a great film, and what it says about Kurosawa's art. Joining us, in addition to this week's critics of Tim Cogshell and Andy Klein, Peter Rayner, Christian Science Monitor film critic, joins us as well. Peter, let me just start with you, and what is it about this film that has made it such a point of influence for the directors who followed?
Well, it's one of the great action movies of all time, for one thing, and Kurosawa was always regarded somewhat incorrectly as the most Western of the great Japanese directors, and certainly with Seven Samurai and a number of his other pictures like Yojimbo, not only were they tremendously influential on the films that directors that came after, particularly in Hollywood, but he was also someone who, you know, it was very important that he also was influenced by Hollywood. John Ford was a major influence on him. And Seven Samurai can be sort of thought of as a Western, which, of course, it was remade as Magnificent Seven in 1960. But it's just the fact that it's able to compress incredible action and also psychological drama, you know, human elements, is extremely rare in this type of movie. Usually it's one or the other, but this one just it puts it all together. And so directors like George Lucas, you know, was very influenced by Kurosawa. Hidden Fortress is really a template for Star Wars. Coppola, you know, all of these directors absolutely revered him. Spielberg, they even helped him get some of his films made and distributed in his later years when he was having trouble doing that in Japan.
This also brought Toshiro Mifune, of course, to the screen as one of the samurai. Seven Samurai is set in 16th century Japan in the Sengoku period, follows the story of a village of desperate farmers who need to protect their crops from bandits who are going to be returning after the harvest to steal the crops. So they hire samurai to be able to defend the village. It was the most expensive film made in Japan. Japan up to that time took a year to shoot, a number of different challenges along the way, and of course has stood the test of time. Tim, your thoughts about the importance of Seven Samurai?
Well, yeah, the way it has rippled throughout history, I think is one of its importances. We see in this story a kind of hero, a kind of heroes that we come to see over and over and over again, whether they're with buddies or not. Clint Eastwood has played one of these guys, many High Plains Drifter, even the guy in Unforgiven. You know, they're samurai is what these guys are. And of course, there is in fact that Magnificent Seven movie and a couple more of those magnificent movies after that. We don't necessarily have to talk about them, but we can even see that influence push deeper. Rebel Moon just dropped part two, if I'm not mistaken, Zack Snyder's series.
Yeah.
That's Seven Samurai. with a little bit of Hidden Forest, Hidden Fortress in it. That's what it is. The Wu-Tang Clan in the 90s, my boys. Now, they often talk about drawing their inspiration from the Hong Kong cinema, Masters' Flying Guillotine, all that kind of stuff that Annie and I love. But you'll notice that there's seven of them. There are seven Wu-Tang. They even made a record called, I think, Seven Chambers or something like that, and it's all kinds of references. So that's really, really getting deep into the culture when you establish a film from what did we decide, 70 years? Ago,
70 years ago,
and you can hear about it on hip-hop records in the 90s.
Yeah, that's amazing. Andy, let's talk about Hong Kong action films. How much is this an influence on them?
Oh, totally. And let me first mention, nobody's mentioned the other remake of Magnificent Seven, which is A Bug's Life.
Very good.
Which lifted the plot of Magnificent Seven and turned it into an animated comedy, which worked great. All the Hong Kong, young Hong Kong directors revered Kurosawa, much as Western directors did. And this was really his first period action film, unless you count Rashomon has action, but it's really it's work in a different kind of film. And Mifune always holds the screen, as he did. He had starred in a bunch of film noirs that Kurosawa had made in the late 40s, and he, you know, his star was just so obvious, you know, from the get-go, that I think Drunken Angel was a film where he wasn't supposed to be the main character and they had to keep building up his part.
He's got that charisma on screen, always did.
He always, from the get-go. And Seven Samurai, it started, it really is the basis for a whole new kind of Western, even though it itself was influenced by Westerns. But you get, you know, the fact that Yojimbo becomes Fistful of Dollars, these Kurosawa films all get remade as actual Westerns. And sometimes then somebody in Japan will remake the Western that got remade from one of these. But the influence in Asia was, I've talked to John Woo about this a lot. Everybody looked at Kurosawa as you know, the master, which frankly he was. I mean, the number of great films, both melodramas, period action, period non-action, the High and Low, which is sort of a detective moral crisis.
Which Spike Lee, I understand, is remaking.
Yep. Which I'm worried about, because it's perfect as it is. But Kurosawa's body of work is simply incredibly seminal.
Peter, let's talk about where the idea for the story comes from. Kurosawa, one of three screenwriters on the film. What is the source material? Where does this idea stem from?
Well, Kurosawa himself was actually descended from a samurai family. There had been other samurai films prior to this. I don't know of any specific text that the film is based on, but it was just sort of a groupthink about, various, legends and stories and folklore that had been handed down about samurai. And, it took, they 3 months of pre-production on this film. They built the sets. The studio didn't want them to do that. They wanted them to, build it on the Toho sets. He said, "No, I'm going to go out and build real sets. It helps the actors if it's real." And then they rehearsed for a month. It was a very transformative experience. It wasn't just like they took a novel and made it. And it was a long, involved process, as it often was with Kurosawa. And as you mentioned, it went way over budget and so forth. But it was so successful that they let it run because it looked so great in the rushes.
What kind of a studio system, Peter, did Japan have back in the 50s? Anything comparable to what we had with the studio system here in the States?
It was somewhat comparable. You had Toho and some other companies that had a hierarchy, and they were basically as strict and intransigent as a lot of the Hollywood studios were. Not certainly to the extent that we had it, but what was interesting about Kurosawa is when he won the Venice Golden Lion in 1951 for Rashomon, suddenly everyone in the West said, wow, you know, Japan actually makes movies and they're good. In fact, you know, they've been making great movies since the silent era. You know, Ozu had directed many silent films, etc. And so all of a sudden, you know, these directors like Kurosawa and Mizoguchi and Ishikawa and others, you know, said it was like a found treasure, but they'd been there all along or were in the process of being there all along. And, you know, so it really, this film in particular, though, Seven Samurai, was so influential and so powerful globally, not only in Japan and in the West, but, you know, everywhere they saw this film. They said, this guy is just an incredible master. He used telephoto lenses, and also he shot most of the film with three cameras, and he basically edited it himself. You know, he was an artist and a draftsman before he even made a movie, and so he plotted everything out as fluid as the film looks. It was very carefully planned, shot by shot.
We're talking about the 70th anniversary today of the classic film Seven Samurai, released April 26th, 1954, from director and writer Akira Kurosawa. We're joined by Peter Rayner, our Film Week critic and Christian Science Monitor film critic and authority on Akira Kurosawa and this film. Also joined by critics Andy Klein and Tim Cogshell. We'll continue our conversation on Japanese cinema, on Kurosawa, and Seven Samurai's impact when we come back in 1 minute. Listening to Fumio Hayasaka's music from the score of Seven Samurai, released 70 years ago and one of the most influential films in movie history. I'm joined by critics Peter Rayner, Tim Cogshell, and Andy Klein as we're talking about the influence of the film, which involves a village in Japan in the 16th century, which hires a group of samurai to protect the village from bandits who are planning to return to steal the harvest of the village on which they depend. And the drama unfolds from there, and who's going to outwit whom. Let's talk a little bit about Japanese cinema generally. Peter, you were just sharing about how there was a bit of a studio system, but perhaps not with the super tight controls which the U.S. studios were known for. To what extent was the Japanese homegrown film market a thing? Was it a significant part of the Japanese entertainment economy back in the early 50s?
Yes, I mean, films were incredibly popular in Japan, but you know, audiences basically went for the same type of film that they do, you know, in most countries, which is you know, sort of action oriented or, you know, heavy drama. The smaller, more subtle films, personal dramas, domestic dramas, you know, fared less well. But you know, with vast exceptions, the film that Kurosawa made before Seven Samurai was Ikiru, which is, you know, in some ways equally great and a very, very different type of movie. It's about, you know, a mousy office worker who's dying and wants to do one wonderful thing in his life before he dies. And it's just an absolutely incredible
movie. I love
movie
that movie.
On a very different scale. And that was successful. I think ultimately, you know, the Japanese audiences certainly gravitated towards action films. At the same time that Seven Samurai was going on, there was Inagaki, the Japanese director, did a samurai trilogy from 1954 through 1956 that was extremely popular.
Andy, your thoughts about what it is about Kurosawa that made him such a strong director? Because, you know, he's highly versatile. It's not like there's, you know, one genre for which he's known. His films are all over the place thematically. But what is it? What's his talent?
Almost every form. I would say he was less successful with comedy. He did one or two. I mean, Dodos Kaden, and there may be another one, which don't work as well. Although there's comic elements all of his action films that are terrific. It's kind of analogous to Hitchcock. The one time he made an upfront comedy in the 40s, it wasn't very good, even though his films are so funny. Essentially, he was a master of every aspect of the filmmaking. He co-wrote almost all these films, if not all of them. I didn't check. And his planning, which Peter mentioned, that brought it out. But the fact that he made films that Japanese films that traveled, even though there was that thing Peter said about them being considered too Western in Japan, although maybe not really. His films were the first Japanese films in starting with Rashomon to really take the world stage after the war. I mean, obviously everything got completely, you know, reset after World War II. And the film industry that picked up after that, they had Kurosawa and a couple other really terrific directors actively working, but nobody caught the world imagination like his films did.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts as well.
One of the things that is raised to a high level of art here is the notion of the Pyrrhic victory. Particularly at the end of this film, when we see those mounds with the swords sticking out of them. Kurosawa raised, I mean, the Pyrrhic victory had been around since the beginning of storytelling, but somehow he raised that notion to a high art level here, that you can win, yet still lose. I think the last line of the film is something like, the samurai did not win here, the peasants or something like that won. And that's a sort of powerful notion that, again, ripples its way over across the next 70 years of cinema, that the win isn't always a win. It depends on what the win costs.
Peter, as we consider the influence of Kurosawa in directors who are working right now, are there some that you would say you see that influence in their work, those working today?
Well, I think, to some extent, directors like Chris Nolan and James Cameron, you know, in the sort of bigness of what they do and in the ways that they, you know, make the film as much of a visual experience as they can. I think Kurosawa's influence is more of just a kind of wow influence. It's like, I don't necessarily want to make movies the way he did, not that I could, but it's just so gratifying to see the medium used in that way. Every filmmaker of all stripes, from, you know, Polanski was a huge fan of Kurosawa's. You know, their movies are not like Kurosawa's, and yet they all revered him because he was able to do so much with film, you know, that was just completely out of the box. Also, you know, we should mention his great collaboration with Mifune, you know, over so many movies. That's one of the great collaborations, mm-hmm. You know, like Huston and Bogart. And
Ford and Wayne, and yeah.
Yeah. He really, but Kurosawa, you know, the studio system in Japan was not kind to him over time, and ultimately he was not able to make movies for a while. That's why Lucas and Coppola stepped in and basically got him to, was able to make Kagamusha that way, and Ron, two of his most powerful movies, particularly Ron, would not have been made without their intervention.
Wow. Thank you all so much for talking with us about the 70th anniversary of Akira Kurosawa's classic Seven Samurai, which is available for streaming on Max and Amazon Prime Video. My thanks to Peter Rayner, Christian Science Monitor film critic, Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com, and Andy Klein of AV Club. And we invite you to join us for our next Film Week screening, our series of movies set in Los Angeles. One of the greats of all time, the classic film noir directed by Billy Wilder, Double Indemnity, starring Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray, with Edward G. Robinson. We'll be showing it on the big screen at Vidiot's in Eagle Rock on Saturday night, May 11th, 6:30 p.m. I sure hope to see you there. We'll be filling Vidiot's with Film Week listeners enjoying seeing Double Indemnity together. And then afterwards, a post-screening conversation. Our Film Week critic, Claudia Puig, will be joining me and the co-authors of a new book from Turner Classic Movies on Double Indemnity and film noir. Please join us. Tickets at las.com/events. Have a great weekend.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.